Welcome. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Jennifer Kopasz-Rose.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the midweek version of the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists.
Yay, artists.
Jennifer, welcome.
Why, thank you.
What fun. So Jennifer did a Friday night show, was it?
I think it was a Friday night.
Yeah. Yes. So we got to see her work and talk to her, and we just decided we should give this a try with a little co-hosting. So, yay.
Yeah. Yay. I know. I'm excited.
What fun. Yep. So we'll get to you later.
Okay.
Because we got to explore you a little bit, you know.
Oh.
Goes with the deal.
Okay.
One time, and then after that, it's just, you know, whatever.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. So tonight, now, the live show tonight, the Stitch Hour, Wednesday night Stitch Hour, is going to be Karen Hedberg, who teaches punch needle at Sassy Jack's. And I'm going to be the clueless idiot who has never done punch needle, and Karen is going to teach me. So if you've never done punch needle, are curious about it, or have done a lot of it and want some tips from a highly skilled teacher, this is your show. And Jennifer will be there to handle questions. So you'll be able to ask questions, and Jennifer will be monitoring those, and we'll get to watch me fumble my way through punch needle.
It'll be fine.
I hope so. You've done a bunch of it. Now, okay, so I've got questions for you, okay?
Oh, okay.
We'll save the other announcements for later, because now I have questions for you, because you've done a bunch of it.
Yes.
So the standard thing is that two-tiered, for holding the fabric, is that two-tiered Morgan hoop thing, right?
The Morgan hoop, which is what I have.
That's what you use.
Yes.
Okay. Now I have the K's Creation punch needle thing. That's a Lazy Susan, a rectangle on a Lazy Susan with grabby stuff on the sides to pull the cloth. So I'll be using that.
Yeah. And I've seen those too.
Yeah. Okay. So you're familiar with that.
Yes.
So that's the holding device, but I was curious about the Morgan hoop because it's a two-tiered thing. Is that so you can use either side?
Right. So, you know, it's got two different sizes, so whichever size fits your project best. And then that gives you room so you're not poking yourself, you know, and it's a stand, and then you can, because you punch down horizontally or vertically perpendicular to the fabric. And you want to make sure you don't punch yourself.
That would be good. Yeah.
Yeah. But I have seen some people just use it in a hoop and do it away from them.
Oh.
But I don't know. It's too much tension on your shoulders and neck and stuff for me.
Okay.
At least for me.
So that's what you use. All right. So now when Kim sent me from Sassy Jack's, when she sent me the materials I need, she sent the, what is the cloth?
Weaver's cloth.
Weaver's cloth. She drew the design on. And if you order the kit from Kim, and she has the, it's on her website, you can order the kit and then use the video from tonight to guide you if you've never done it. So she drew the design for me, which is good, on a piece of weaver's cloth. And then she sent a second piece. So, you know, I need to ask Karen. I mean, obviously I'll ask Karen, but I wanted to, you know, I want to know, and you're here and you know. So do you use two pieces of cloth, or was she just sending me a second one?
No, she must have just been sending you another one to either practice on, or maybe if you want to draw your own drawing.
Okay.
Or, you know.
So you just use one layer of one weaver's cloth. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. There's no reason to do two.
Okay.
No.
Because it seemed to me like two layers, I would be forever not getting through the second layer and it would start to sag.
Yeah. No, there's no reason to use two. No, okay. She must have just sent you a spare piece for fun for yourself.
Well, all right. I'll take that.
Do your own thing. You know,
I'll take that.
You can take any drawing and turn it into a punch needle.
Okay.
I mean, basically anything. Like the one project I did that has the four, it looks like the little quilt squares. It's the beige and the red and the green.
Mm-hmm.
That's just quilt squares that somebody put together, and you punch it into anything, basically. You can take any cross stitch or something. And draw it out, turn it into a punch needle.
Because all you're really doing is just filling a space with thread.
Right. It's like coloring with thread.
Yeah, okay.
Instead of, you know, go to your kids' well, I don't know if your kids have color books. Maybe your grandkids' color books. If they have coloring books, you can get a little thing and trace the picture out and put it on your fabric and then fill it in.
Okay. Yeah. Seems all quite approachable till I pick up that needle and it looks like it's, that looks like it's going to be the challenge. So
it's not that bad.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm game to try because I'm curious about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's fun.
Yeah. Because, you sent me some pictures. Mm-hmm. And it always looks great. I mean, all the punch needle and some of that higher end, more sophisticated stuff is just flat out gorgeous. I mean, some of those designers do beautiful work.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, that I get the punch needle and primitive stitcher magazine. And
yes,
holy
too.
Smokes, folks. You're doing that? That's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Super pretty. And then, if you use, you can use DMC or those little Valdani balls. Those are three stranded. It's in three strands of a ball, so you don't have to separate them out, and you can just use it from the ball.
Oh,
so then you don't have to stop as much. But if you use DMC, you do try to get a long strand, but you have to separate the strands out and then put them together.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of starting and stopping when you use DMC.
I see.
But with the Valdani, you just have your ball. I think it's like a 20-yard ball, and you just go to town.
So it's like a knitter. You just have a ball sitting there and you just keep pulling off of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You just go.
Hmm.
Puncha, puncha, puncha.
Okay. All right. Sounds like it looks to me like a technique that is very good for eliminating frustration. So,
there you go.
Yeah. I may end up liking it. I may end up liking it a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's not difficult. It's easy. You just make sure you thread your needle correctly, and she'll teach you how to do that. And,
Well, we're starting from scratch. That's what it's going to be, is from scratch. Mm-hmm. Here's how to do it. So we'll find out.
Right.
It'll be fun. Yes. Yep.
It will.
So that's tonight, 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock on the YouTube channel, our Wednesday night show. And then speaking of the live shows, Friday night, Beth will be back. And Beth's been doing a lot of monkeying around with dyeing fabric.
Ooh.
And if you follow Beth on her Instagram, she's been putting objects on there and making shapes and all. It's pretty interesting what she's been doing. She has that creative streak in her that, so we're going to hear from Beth about fabric dyeing and see what she's doing. So that'll be fun.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. Because a lot of people wonder about, well, could I take my own cloth and dye it? And sure, but
I heard something somewhere, but I haven't seen it done. Something about dyeing with shaving cream.
Huh?
And I heard it mentioned somewhere on some show. Yeah, I guess you put the shaving cream on and the dye together, and it makes it swoosh somewhere. I don't know, but I can't find anywhere where that's like. But I heard about it on somebody's cross stitch.
Just regular shaving cream?
I think so. Yeah, like the regular foamy shaving cream, and you put it on, and you put the dye, and I think it's supposed to make it kind of a swooshy, swirly on the fabric. Maybe Beth knows something about that.
We'll put that on her list. That's interesting.
Yeah, because I tried looking for it and can't find it.
Couldn't find it, huh?
Mm-mm. And of course, it's interesting because I like to dye too. So
yeah. Oh, you do. Yeah. Okay. Because see, that raises the question. The question: who on earth thought to use shaving cream with dye?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know.
I know. But some of these artist people, they do interesting things. So.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I'm creative, but not that creative.
I mean, that's different. So you dye fabric too then?
Oh, yeah, I have dyed some of my fabric with RIT before, and I do the coffee tea dye. And then when I was knitting and stuff, I've also dyed my yarn with food coloring because, wool is a protein fiber, and so you can use food coloring and stuff to dye your yarn.
Sounds good to me.
Yes, so I've done.
Not my world.
I've experimented in dyeing before, and I've dyed my cross-stitch fabric. So it is fun. Because it's like, it's something I can do myself instead of paying a ton of money for somebody else to do it. Well, I can
Right.
do that.
Yeah, and there
So.
must, I mean, after you do it a few times, you must be able to sense and get some control over
Right.
how rich the color is or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, you learn like, okay, I need to do this more, I need to do that more, or bake it longer, don't bake it so long. Yes.
Baking linen, yeah.
Yes, because it as it dries in there, it's like 200 degrees, and you bake it and you scrunch it up, and then the parts that are raised up, they dry faster, and they, I guess they kind of lightly burn, but you don't want it to do too much. But it makes it darker, or it just darkens the color. I don't know if it burns technically, but it's drier than the bottom part, so yeah.
Interesting.
So
Well,
it's fun to,
yeah.
and then you get it right away. You don't have to wait for it to come, you know.
Right.
It's like I
Right.
want
Yeah.
it
Well, and plus it's
now.
part of your creative process then. You get to
So.
make, yeah, all of it, yeah. See, and
Right.
I'm a solid color background. I'm not a big fan of the swirly stuff, so
Okay.
you know.
Yeah, I like it more, you know. I haven't found anything like where I've done anything crazy yet. But I've
Yet.
done just, you know, making things look a little old.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, that's how far I've gone so far.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Well, Friday night, we're gonna see what Beth's doing. She's
That'll be exciting because I like watching that.
done something where she was putting metal pieces, like pieces of hardware down on it and getting the shapes to show up. I don't know what she's doing, but
That's cool.
yeah, so
Nice.
we'll get to learn about that Friday night. That'll be fun.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure.
Yep. And yeah, there's just a string of things here. And then Sunday's guest is Madeline Harwell. And Madeline Elizabeth Designs, or I think she just uses Madeline Elizabeth. Madeline is, I think she's 16, 15,
Wow.
16, something in there. I think she's a sophomore, if I recall.
Oh my.
Needlepoint, painted canvas, needlepoint designer. And you
Wow.
go, okay, so that's, like kindergarten painting. How can that be? Why did I even bother? No. The young lady has some serious talent. She has some beautiful designs, beautiful canvases, and she has her act together. It was fun talking to her and hearing about how she goes about it. And yeah, she has a healthy little business going, designing needlepoint canvases, painting them. Well, I mean, she sends them out now. I mean, she paints like all of them do, paint the original and then send to a painting service. But
Oh, right.
yeah, she has a healthy line of very nice stuff. I was, 'cause somebody suggested you should talk to her. Okay, maybe.
Oh.
'Cause you have that initial reaction, like how, yeah. Then I went and looked at her stuff and it's like, wait, well, I got to talk to her. I absolutely have to talk to her. And just a tremendous conversation with her. Terrific young lady and really, really some nice canvas designs. Really nice. So,
Wow.
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that was fun. That was really fun. And
Yeah, and so young. She's
I
got
know. I know.
a future.
And she has a business that's working right now as a teenager. And
Nice.
yeah. So and she's very fortunate. Her mother is involved in really handling the business end for her. 'Cause you say,
Right.
how can a teenager going to school do that kind of thing? Well, her mother is a huge factor in this thing, in that the business part, she's handling the day-to-day stuff while Madeline's at school
Right.
and
So
doing,
she's the business manager, and then Madeline's the artist.
right. But the
Nice.
combination is really working because it's some terrific stuff. So, yeah, that's Sunday's guest. Fun.
Exciting.
Yep.
Good.
For the Royal Garden people, there are three videos. I pinned it at the top of the page, the Fiber Talk website, wetalkfiber.com. I pinned it at the top. So there are three videos now, for the crescent, the waffle, and the walnutto. And I also included the video where we kicked off the show or the stitch along, so that gets the double fan doubled in there. So wherever you're at on the spectrum of Royal Garden, there are four videos available to help you with the Royal Garden. And Beth and I are going to do a Royal Garden stitch along thing here coming up very soon, And so that's right at the top. Now, I did a, so that the videos didn't shove the current podcast way down the page. I just did a couple sentences, and then you click on a continue or read more or something it says, and that's where you go to the page and see the videos. So don't freak out that they're not there. Just click on the link. And you're waiting for Royal Garden to get to you too, right?
Yes, I did order it, and from Sassy Jacks, and, you know, it's on hold, so
yes,
whenever she gets in the stuff, it'll come. Yep. But I did watch that first one with the double fan double, and I was like, oh, it reminded me of Tamari a little bit, because in some of the patterns in Tamari, you weave under and over.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
So, yeah, so it's like, I'm like, oh, I've done that, you know? So it's like, cool.
So you'll relate right to it, because, yeah, all right, now you got, now, based on what you showed us the other night with the Tamari balls, it's the same kind of string art type thing.
Yeah, because some of them you don't always pierce. You want it to weave under, so you have to weave under some threads and go over others, and then you do your stitch. Yeah, so it's...
So you'll connect with this right away then.
Yeah, I think once I get it, I'll catch up.
Yeah.
I'll be right up there. I'm excited.
So this, and then the reverse of this tells me that in doing this stuff, then I have kind of at least a clue for Tamari balls.
Yeah. And I think since you like geometrics and stuff anyway, that the Tamari will sync with you because you already think shapes and geometric and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of what you like.
Yeah. You were, speaking of that, you were describing the preparation for the Tamari balls.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I got it. I understood what you were doing. It seemed like a lot of work to get it just so, or does it just seem like that and it's really not that big of a deal?
I think it seems like it. It's really not that big of a deal. I mean, wrapping with the yarn and the thread, it does take time.
Yeah.
But it's easy. But you just have to make sure you wrap evenly. You know, you keep moving around, and you keep even. And then, like I said, the most important part is putting those guidelines on.
Okay.
The Krynek guidelines. That's the most important part, because everything you do after that's based off those guidelines.
Yeah.
And if they're on there wonky, then it's going to be wonky.
Okay.
And that's how it is.
So we take our standard styrofoam ball, and then you just took just regular old yarn and wrapped that. So is the procedure kind of do one layer and make sure you cover that ball evenly?
Right.
And then build up from there.
Right. You've got to cover it evenly and kind of thickly too. You don't want to put like a thin layer on. You want a good layer.
Okay. A good layer meaning two or three layers of yarn?
Yeah, or maybe like a quarter inch.
Oh, my. Okay.
You kind of think about, but depending how thick your yarn is, you know.
Yeah. And are you pulling the yarn fairly tight, or are you keeping a pretty good tension as you wrap?
Firm. Yeah, you want to do firm, but you don't want it too tight. You don't want to strangle it, you know. Okay. But you do want it firmer. You don't want it, because if it's loosey-goosey, it's going to be uneven.
Yeah.
You know. So you want it firm, but not strangling the ball.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
No, I'm trying to get a sense of it, because someday I'm going to do one. So you want just a little bit of give when you get done with that yarn. But if you get a lot of give, then you're just asking for trouble down the road.
Yeah. And then when you start putting on your first layer of thread, you know, it does sink in a little, but you just keep going evenly around until you get those smooshed up, the part, you know, you can see how you can even it out.
Uh-huh.
And then even sometimes as I'm going and I'm looking at the thread, you can kind of see that there's a poofy part there. So then you take some thread and you kind of wrap it over that area to unpoof it. You can kind of see where there's like a bubble. Almost,
okay.
You know, and then also you do that thing where you roll it between your hands to kind of smooth it out.
Okay. So there's.
It's not that hard. I don't find it that hard.
Yeah. And then the thread that you're putting over the yarn, what are we, pearl cotton, what are you using?
The base thread?
Yeah.
That's serger thread.
Serger thread. Okay, so you're getting a cone of that then?
Well, I get, because for the size of balls that I'm doing three strands at a time. So I get three cones, and then I wrap a bunch, and then I cut it down to two strands, and then I wrap a bunch there. I basically, when you get to the thread, when you cover the yarn, you want to make sure you get all the yarn covered with the three strands. So when you get to that point and you're sure it's all covered, maybe a little bit more, then you cut it down. And then with the two strands, you go around and you make sure you get all the three strand stuff covered to where you don't see it.
Okay.
And you can tell. And then you go down to one strand and then you cover up all the two strand stuff with the one strand. It takes a lot of thread.
Yeah. Well, that was,
that's why we use big cones of serger thread.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Cause that's what I was getting to is yes, a lot of thread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So one thing I did try on one ball, I needed to make a ball real quick for a class, and I was like, let me try an experiment with using up some of my grandmother's old thread from her sewing kit and some of my old thread, polyester stuff and stuff that I'm just not going to use, and let's use it up. So I wrapped it, and my main layer on top, though, was going to be like a beige color. So I didn't really think. I used like dark colors underneath, and I wrapped it and stuff, and it was going fine. But then when I went to put on my top layer, my beige, it took a ton of thread to cover up and not see any of that dark stuff underneath.
Oh.
Like a lot. You'd be surprised at how it peeks through. And that was a lesson, you know. I experimented and I learned, like, yeah, you can use other threads, but don't use something darker than what your top layer is. Otherwise, you're going to be wrapping a ton, a ton to get it all covered.
It's like trying to cover dark paint on a wall then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, it'll be peeking through, like, a few layers down. You can see this dark color still peeking through, and you've got to keep wrapping because it's, that was interesting.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I won't do that again.
Yeah, there's a lesson. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. But yeah. Hey, you know.
Okay.
That's how you learn things, right?
Yep. So, I was trying to get it.
And then that was a way of me seeing, too, really. You can really see how the layers, you can see how deep some of these, you know, you think it's way down there, but it's still showing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting.
Hmm.
I thought it was interesting, but I had to wrap a lot of thread.
Will it ever end?
Yeah. So it worked out in the end, but it took longer.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a sense because that's, I got to get that book for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then
just
to get a sense of what's involved in this, because it just,
they
look like a lot of fun. And then the thought of having, three or four or five that you can put in a bowl, that's victory right there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun. And I saw that you guys found that the EGA had some sort of a class.
Yes.
And that it might be retiring or something, but that it was by Barbara Seuss.
Yes. Right.
I didn't know if you guys found out more about that.
Right.
Maybe if there's a ton of interest, they won't retire it.
Maybe. Maybe we could do that. We could revive it.
Yeah. Everybody's like, hey, we want to do this class.
Well, we could try. Yeah. I don't know what the status is of that, but anyway, it sounds like the book itself can get the job done.
Yeah, it is very, like I said, you have to be able to follow instructions on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. Okay. It's a curiosity thing for me, I have to say.
Well, maybe someday I can show you how in real life.
Okay. All right. Okay, I'm game. Okay, the big announcement. Got a big announcement here. I'm pretty excited about this. We did the Italian Needlework, Remembering Ricamo, with April McNee from the Embroiderers Guild Galleries in New South Wales.
Yes.
And I said that we were looking into other tours. Well, we have the next one lined up. So Wednesday, September 3... 8 o'clock, the usual Wednesday night show. Wednesday, September 3, April is going to give a tour of their next exhibit. And it's called The Secret Garden. And the artists are Sharon Peoples and Belinda Jessup. And that's J-E-S-S-U-P, Jessup. So Sharon Peoples and Belinda Jessup. And they do machine embroidery.
Oh.
But people. A lot of people. A lot of faces, eyes, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, look them up because it's amazing stuff. And they're going to be there. So the September 3 is when it opens, like the day it opens. So they'll be there to join with April and talk about their work.
Wow. So is it like freehand machine embroidery? Like they're moving the fabric themselves underneath their machine? Or are they using a long arm? And
write those questions down. You ask them. I have no clue.
Okay.
Write them down. I have no clue. None whatsoever. Okay. I just know it looks terrific.
Or not.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Okay, because there's a machine embroidery where it's programmed, but I'm kind of thinking that this is probably freehand machine embroidery.
No, this is art.
What I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, this is not some programmed thing. This is art, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, if that question, yeah, no, this is pure art. Yeah, so right. I'm sure somebody's sitting there freehand. Moving it around, yeah.
Yeah, but is it on a stationary or a long arm?
You write those questions down, Jennifer. Write
I'm
them down.
Doing it right now.
and you ask them that night because I have no clue. But yeah, so they'll be there. So we'll be able to communicate with the artists themselves and talk about the exhibit. And when I looked it up, it's just amazing work. Really is.
And, wow. Yeah, I've seen some. So yeah.
So we'll get to do that. And April and I have been working on the technology, so we'll have, she has a gimbal now for her mobile device, her phone or whatever she used, so it'll be a steadier, it'll hold it steady, so it'll be a little easier to look at them, and we're working on a microphone too, so.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so the sound, it will just improve the technology. It's like anything, it has to evolve, we have to learn and then make adjustments. But April
it's amazing we have the technology anyway. So,
right.
I mean, that's fantastic.
Yep.
So now you got to fine tune it.
Yep. No, right after the Remembering Ricamo, then the communication with April was, I got to get, you know, we got to do better technology wise the next time. And she was on it in a heartbeat. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it was really good though.
Yeah. No, I was,
you know.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. It was just, you know, all right, now how can we make it better the next time? So,
right.
Yep. No, I was really excited. That was, I really enjoyed that.
Yes.
Seeing that Italian embroidery, that was really terrific.
Yeah, it was really pretty. And then some of that cut work stuff where they did they said it was the buttonhole stitches and then they would cut out the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I found my grandmother grew up on a farm in Ohio. And they were from Germany originally, her family. And they, I went through some of her stuff and they had a bunch of those pieces and you could tell they were done by hand.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering, and my grandmother had passed away, so I can't ask her. But I don't know if she and her family did that, because I know she did stitch back in the day. Then she went on to have 7 boys.
Oh.
So... You know, the stitching didn't quite, you know, who you're going to stitch for, you know.
Right.
She got more into hunting and fishing and farming and stuff. but yeah, early on, she, you know, when she was young, she did some stitching and some cross stitching and some crewel work. And yeah, and growing up, I know she did some stitching. So I wonder if that's her work and her sister's or it's got to be. I think it has to be. It's gorgeous. Hmm. I brought it home and I'm like, ooh, maybe I'll try to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of stuff you hang on to, don't you? Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Definitely. Yep.
No, that's beautiful stuff. I got to, Tessa, who was there, we're working on doing a show with her because she obviously knows Italian embroidery 6 ways to Sunday. So, working on setting up a show with her. She's a very busy shop owner, so getting the time is going to be tough. But I would like to find someone from Italy and a designer also and talk about that because it's beautiful stuff. Oof.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yep. So that'll happen the first Wednesday in September 3. We'll get to see the exhibit, The Secret Garden. And the first one, you know, the Italian one was really well received. People seem to enjoy it. So we're going to keep doing these. I mean, April's got exhibits going on all the time. And something I think just about every month. And
wow.
So we'll take advantage of that because, you know, like I said during the show, for 90% of us, the only way you see it's just spend a lot of time in the air and a lot of money. And
right.
Yeah, to be able to see this and hear from, you know, to hear from April as the curator, obviously she has to know quite a bit just to put it together. And then in this instance, to hear from the actual artist is going to be a treat. So, yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So that's coming up. So mark your calendars, September 3. That's our
good
deal.
Stuff. Yay.
Yep. Oh, this is exciting. Marga bought the beginner kit from Michelle Guida.
Yeah,
I saw. The wool applique. So it's on its way.
Nice. That'll be fun.
Yep. I think we'll have to get Marga on a show when she gets it done.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be the hard part.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. But, yeah, a reminder, those beginner kits, Michelle Guida has those beginner kits put together. If you want to try a wool applique, you know, hit her up for one, and it's a low barrier to get into that aspect of the hobby, and there's not much material or equipment involved at all, really none at all. You already have most of it, scissors and needle and thread. So, so check that out. But, yeah, so Marga's looking forward to it, giving it a try. So
yeah, that's exciting.
Yep. Coming up.
Nice. Maybe okay. It'll be her thing, you know?
Yeah. That's all right. Yeah.
Cool.
That's all right. We'll take that. Yeah.
Yeah. You can do beautiful stuff with wool applique.
Oh, I know. And that, you know, it's the kind of thing, you know, how when you buy a car and then for the next few months, that's all you see is the same model that you bought, you know?
Right. Yes.
Well, so I do a show with Michelle about wool applique. And then it seems like every time I turn around, I'm seeing wool applique. And boy, it's just amazing what people do with that.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of quilters will mix their wool applique and their quilting.
Oh.
So they'll have their quilt, the base of it will be cotton. And then they will put, instead of normal quilting applique, where you have to turn the edges under and stuff, they'll do wool applique on their quilter's cotton. And that's really pretty too. And it gives it more dimension and stuff.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really pretty.
Hmm.
And you don't have to worry about turning under the edges, which is always fun.
I was going to say, which is a colossal pain. Yes.
There are so many techniques, and I've tried them all. And certain techniques work for some things and certain techniques work for others. And it just depends on what you like to do and what's easier for you. But there is a lot of techniques for needle turn applique or applique. You can do needle turn. You can freeze a paper. So many.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the freezer paper thing was two things that came out of Michelle's thing. One was the freezer paper and the other was marking the stitch width on your thumb. That was
cool. Yeah. I had never thought of that. I just eyeball mine.
Yeah.
But having the marking, I'm like, that's genius. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was brilliant. So, But the freezer paper, I didn't know you could do that with freezer paper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have a big old roll of freezer paper just for doing things like that I need to do.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, sure. See, I just thread a needle and put it through a ground cloth,
but,
you know?
You know, I've been in the quilting world, too, so...
Oh.
Because I quilted for... I still quilt. It's just not my super main focus.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, this is... You know, it's becoming clear, I think, to people that you do a lot of things. So, tell us about you.
Yeah.
What
me. Oh. Well, you know... Cross stitch, needlepoint, hand quilting, English paper piecing. I like to sew stuff just by hand, you know, just hand piecing quilts and stuff together. Wool applique. I spin yarn, I crochet, knit, and make things. So I was listening to the Nicola Jarvis and how she talked about how she would watch her dad do the sign painting and stuff. And my dad built, he was a school teacher. But he built house. They went out every year and they built houses. He taught the vocational building program. And so every year the students went out and built a house. But in the summers, he had his own construction business where he built custom homes. And he built a lot of the homes that we lived in. So I grew up on housing, you know, learning to build homes. And my mom did the wallpaper. And that's, so I kind of grew up watching and helping him build things.
So that's where it that's where it comes from then, huh?
Yeah. I mean, and he even, he would even design the houses. He had, he did the, he drafted the plans. And so he had his drafting table and all his tools. And I remember sitting and he would be drafting and I'd be watching him and I'd be coloring in my color books because I was big into color books, and I'd be coloring and he'd be drafting plans. And yeah, it was fun watching that. And then, you know, my mom, she sewed clothes. She did cross stitch. She also did macrame. She crocheted and she paints ceramics. Oh. You know, those ceramics, like she did this Christmas village, just beautiful, like amazing. She paints amazing ceramics. So, and I've done that too. I've painted ceramics, mostly little Christmas ornaments. But yeah, I've got a whole supply of paints and I've painted ceramics. And
so your entire life has been making stuff in that environment.
Making stuff, yeah. Building stuff, yes. Anything that needs built. I remember in high school, I wanted some shelves for my bedroom. So my dad said, we'll draw up some plans and I'll cut them out. And so I drew up to scale plans for these shelves that I wanted, the curve and stuff. And then he cut them out and then I sanded them and I stained them and I even put them up on the wall myself. You know, I can do things.
Yeah.
So, well, that... and then one summer he was doing some remodel on a house. He was a house that he had built with the school, but the lady that had it at that point, her son was in a wheelchair. So he needed to make all the door frames bigger and change the bathroom up for him. Uh-huh. And so I quit my job. I was in university still and I was in Texas, but I quit my job. And I went out to stay with them for the summer and I went and helped him remodel this house and he taught me how to tile. So I know how to tile. And I've tiled our bathroom floor here. So.
Look at you.
I know. I really like doing things myself.
Yeah.
So, but that's how I grew up though.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I wonder psychologically or maybe just physically or both. When you grow up in that kind of environment where you're always doing things with your hands, I think you develop an innate ability, no matter what it is, that you see how to do it and you can approach it.
You can see how to figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I've even done some plumbing in the house here and 'cause I've watched him. You just kind of learn how to do things, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not scary.
A lot of people look at something
and it's scary. And I look at it and I go, well, I know that my dad can do this. And sometimes I'll call and be like, how do you do this? And he'll tell me and I'll do it. But yeah. It doesn't scare me where a lot of people would get scared because they're afraid to break it worse, you know?
Right.
Or whatever. So.
No, I think that's it. I think that's it right there is for you, the fear factor doesn't exist.
Right.
Because you can puzzle it out because you've done, no matter what the application, you've done similar things, putting things together so you see that.
Right.
And
you can see solutions and you're just, you know, I have tools. So
yeah.
When I moved out, when I was young, I moved out and I had tools. My dad sent me with a toolbox with all these tools and stuff. It was great, you know?
Yeah.
And my husband is like, he's like, you've got all your own tools. I'm like, yeah, of course I do. You know?
Why wouldn't I?
Don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. What's your problem? I have my toolbox. Where's yours?
I know, right? And my own ladder, my own tools. I mean, we had a problem at one job I had with the drain in the floor and it kept being a problem. And one day I just brought my tools from home and I just fixed it. Because it wasn't getting fixed. And I was just, I'm just going to fix this. And I did. It was great.
Yep. So. Yeah. Well, see, it's just interesting. It's just interesting that, you know, we all come from different environments. You know, I mean, my dad was always fixing stuff around the house, and I was the person who had to be the second pair of hands. Mm-hmm. And same kind of thing. I mean, I learned the fundamentals, not at the level you obviously had, but the fundamentals. I learned, you know, this is how you hook up a plug in a wall, and it ain't all that tough. You just
I can do all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun for me. I always loved helping my dad. Like, loved it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And because I was good at it too, he enjoyed having me help him. So.
Right.
So yeah, but you know, he was a teacher too, so he's used to teaching kids how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, he had high school kids, but still.
Right. And that makes a difference. Now, see, my dad wasn't a teacher. But my dad wasn't a teacher at all, but I was smart enough to just pay attention.
Right.
You know, that was just my thing, is I just paid attention and absorbed it. But boy, to have a teacher and to show you why and how it goes together, that's extra plus there.
And I always wanted to know the why. That's like the most important thing to know, is why do you do it that way? Why does it need to be that way? Because if you understand why, then it makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so.
So you had a mother and a grandmother doing needlework or sewing or whatever.
And my mom's mom did a lot of that too.
Oh, okay.
So, yes.
So yes. Where did you start your needlework interest? Was it cross stitch? I mean, or were you?
You know, you did home ec when you were in junior high, at least back in my day. I don't know what they call it and stuff now, but you had to do home ec, and I sewed. Then, so I learned, you know, that's when I learned how to sew on a machine, and then I did the cross stitch little piece. But I really, really started focusing on needlework when I was 21, when I had gotten married, not to my husband now, to a different one, and but I had gotten married and moved, and I needed a cheap hobby, something to do. And so I was like, I went to Hobby Lobby and looked around the store, and I saw cross stitch. I'm like, hey, I can do that. And it costs very little. Because back then, DMC was like 20, 25 cents a skein.
Mm-hmm.
So it cost nothing. So yeah, and I started with those little those calico kitten pictures.
There we go.
Yep. And I started there, and then I moved on to that Paul Avon, and then I just went to town. Just did all the stitching. And then when my sister got pregnant, I was about 25, and I had met Urian by this time and had been divorced for a while. And that's when I started crocheting, because I wanted to crochet her a baby blankie. And my mom had taught me how to crochet when I was young. And so I kind of remembered. And then the books, you know, the instructions in the book were good. But then it kept saying to turn, you know, turn your piece. And I'm going, well, it's turning naturally, like, you know, like on a flat surface turning. What they meant was flip it front to back.
Oh.
And I didn't get that. So I went home for Christmas, and I was showing my mom. I'm like, this isn't quite looking right. And it says turn, and I don't understand. And she's like, you've got to flip it. I'm like, oh, okay.
That detail.
Yes. And it just, because she hadn't ever done any patterns like that. Uh-huh. She'd done mostly more basic stuff. And I had only learned how to do like granny square, where you just go around and around. So I didn't know you flipped it around, you know?
Oh.
I had no idea. So, but then after she showed me that, then I was like, oh, okay. And then I crocheted a ton too.
Yeah. So what all techniques do you do? Cross stitch, crochet?
Yeah. Knitting. I taught myself how to knit, and I have like a love hate with knitting. So I, when I first taught myself how to knit, I didn't know how the legs are supposed to sit on the needle. And if you knit, you know what I'm talking about. And I was doing it wrong. So all of my knitting was, all my stitches were twisted. And when they're twisted, they don't bounce back properly. They kind of lock. And I knit my first pair of socks that way. And I was looking, I'm like, this, you know, I knit socks. When you knit your first sock, you feel like you perform magic. It's like amazing. But I did them with the twisted stitch. So they stretched out and wouldn't bounce back. So I did some research, and I looked on Knit Picks, is a big knitting company, and they had some videos, and I finally saw a video where I saw what I was doing wrong. And then I got it right. So then I started knitting all the things. And I tried knitting some sweaters and like some vests. And what you have to do there, you have to knit a swatch first. And then you have to wash it. And then you have to dry it. And then you have to kind of stretch it, because when the garment is made, it's heavy. So I did all those things. So you do all that prep work. Then you knit the thing. And then you finally get it done and you wash it and you put it on and it's 20,000 sizes too big. And you just want to scream. You're so frustrating. And I was like, I'm done. I have two sweaters that I'm still, one just needs a sleeve and the collar. I really should finish that one. The other one, I might unravel it and re-soak the yarn and re-skein it and use it for something else, because it is just too frustrating. And then I had quit knitting for a while and I'd gone back to cross stitch. And then I wanted to knit something up, those stars. I don't know if you've seen on my Instagram recently, I've got these stars that I've knit. It's like a star shape, but it's in an octagon.
Uh-huh.
And it's with some yarn that I spun myself. And so I wanted to show off my pretty yarn. And I was going to do this one pattern out of this one book, and they just put in these weird things to make it so complicated. And I spent all day trying to figure it out. It made me so frustrated. I just, by the end of the day, I was just so upset and depressed. I'm like, this is why I stopped knitting. You know,
yeah.
It's just too frustrating for me. So I'm now sticking to basic stuff. I figured out my socks. Like, I like knitting socks, and I have figured out my formula that works for my foot and what I like to do. And I've written it down. So I have my formula, and I will knit socks, and I'll do like maybe some shawls and small stuff, but I'm not doing big stuff anymore. It's just too frustrating. I'm done.
But you'll spin. But you enjoy spinning.
Yes, I do. It is so meditative and relaxing. And you can take your spun yarn and make something like a small shawl or something, you know, to show it off. So.
That spinning. Yeah. I've seen it done, you know, county fair kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mesmerizing to watch. And people I've seen do it, you know, it's like knitters where they just, their mind's elsewhere and their hands are just doing this thing. And it's just amazing to me. But then you start to look into all the prep work, like getting the raw wool and all that stuff. It seems like an awful lot of.
Yeah, I don't do the raw wool part. I let somebody else prepare my fiber. I thought I was going to want to do that at one point, and I'm like, you know, I just don't think I want to go to all that trouble. I just want to get to the spinning part. That's the fun part for me.
Okay.
So I buy prepared fluff.
Oh.
It's already ready. It's ready to go.
I see.
I don't deal with all that business. No. It's too much for me.
Okay. Okay. I thought you had to do all that, so you don't have to.
No, somebody's more than willing to. Yeah, it's called roving. You can buy prepared roving. You can buy dyed roving. I mean, they do some pretty fancy stuff. And then the way you spin it up, you can choose how to spin it, how to divide it. People can take the exact same roving that's dyed a certain way and make totally different looking yarn just by the way you divide it up and how you spin it and stuff.
And you have a foot-powered wheel?
Yes, I have a spinning wheel. I have a Kromsky minstrel. And then my dad and I actually made a spinning wheel.
Of course you did.
Yeah, right? Of course. So there's this, it's called Dodec, Dodec. Some guy made up these plans for this spinning wheel, and he called it the Dodec. I don't remember why. I think because it's the way it's shaped, the dodecahedron.
Okay.
How many sides is that? 12? 10? I don't remember.
10, I thought. No, yeah. 12. I think it's 12.
I think so.
I think it's 12.
I don't know. Anyway, so we bought the plans. They were like $6. And then my dad improved it because the top part, so it's a spindle spinning wheel. So it's not one with a flyer that draws it in. You have to, you spin and pull the yarn out, and then you have to wind it onto the spindle. So the whole spindle contraption part was this whole big section that you had to build. And whenever you switched it out, you had to switch out the whole thing. So my dad made it into one where you just stick in, the dowel rod is the spindle, and you sharpen one end where you can just stick the dowel rod in and use that as your spindle and then remove that, and the rest of it stays all together.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so he modified it, which is awesome because, you know, he knows how to do, he makes all, you should see the stuff that he can make. He's made trailers and he makes all sorts of stuff. So anyway, so we built these spinning wheels. I built one for me and one for my niece, and mine's out of black walnut. It's beautiful. So yeah, I used that for a while, and then it was kind of noisy. When I was spinning one night, my husband comes downstairs. He's like, okay, I will buy you whatever spinning wheel you want, but you have to stop that now with that noise. I have to sleep. So I was like, yay. So we went to Rhinebeck, and I got a spinning wheel at Rhinebeck, which is this big fiber festival that's in Dutchess County, New York.
Okay.
In Rhinebeck, New York, but we just call it Rhinebeck. So I went to Rhinebeck and I got a spinning wheel, my Kromsky Minstrel. It's awesome.
And the only question he had was, is it quiet?
Yeah, he didn't care. I mean, it wasn't even that expensive, but because it was a show model, so I even got it a little bit cheaper.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he was just like, as long as it's quiet.
Whatever. And then
I also do drop spindle spinning, or now I do the Russian spindle supported spindle spinning. There's all kinds of ways.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, for the record, the dodecahedron is a polyhedron with 12 flat faces. So 12 faces, 30 edges, and 20 vertices.
Okay. It must be. I don't want to go down to the basement in case my my signal might go, but it's in the basement. But I think it does have 12.
Okay. Well, there we go.
I think that's why it's the dodec.
So there's your official definition right there.
Good Looked stuff. It up.
Yep.
Nice.
For what that's worth. Other than I'm sure there are 10 listeners who go, oh, I know what that is. Yeah.
Exactly. You know.
Yep.
But yeah, that's spin. Yep. Someday I would like to use the yarn I spin in some sort of a, I think that the mesh for needlepoint might be too rough. I don't know. Or maybe I could lay it on top and couch it or something. I'd like to use my fiber in a project sometime.
Well, that's not knitting related. Yeah. You know? I would think that would be a goal. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've got lots to spin up.
So what projects are you working on now? What needlework projects are at the top of the list?
I'm working on Pandemic a lot. And I've been doing those The Flowers of the Month by Cor Ibadacore. They're an Italian designer. And it's Un Anno in Fiore, which is like a year in flowers.
Okay.
And they're these little flowers. They're super cute. And I'm doing them individually. And I'm doing one over one on 28 count. Lugana, I think it is. Because it's an even weave. So I'm working on those. I'm doing the Cottages of the Month by Little House Needleworks. I'm working on those. What else am I doing? Oh, and then Erica Michaels, her 12 Berries of Christmas. I'm doing those. And I'm doing, what am I doing those on? I have to look at my Instagram. But I'm working on those. And oh my gosh, they are so pretty. And I haven't even like finished them yet, you know? Finished them, but they are so pretty.
That Linda and her berries, I'll tell you, I don't think anybody can get in a league with her when it comes to those.
Yeah, I'm doing it one over two on 40 count.
Okay.
So, and oh my goodness, I've done the turtle up to the, I've only done two so far. And the turtle dove one is just so pretty with the swirls and oh my goodness. They are gorgeous.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yep, she really is.
Yeah. And I bought one of her silkberry kits on the silk mesh.
Uh-huh.
Is that what it is?
Silk gauze.
But I haven't silk gauze. Yeah. But I haven't started it yet. But I do have one.
Yeah.
But now I'm waiting for the Royal Garden and Dusk to Dawn, because I want to get those going. So I'm just trying to stay with Pandemic and my little projects. Those little flowers, they take like a day. They're so fast.
Mm. What are those flowers again?
Un Anno in Fiore.
Bless you. What?
Yeah. It's UN Un Anno, ANNO, and then IN, and then Fiore, FIORE.
Okay. And who's the designer?
Coore Ibadacore, C U O R E, and then an E on its own, and then B A T T I C U O R E.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
They have some really cute stuff.
Hmm. Okay. Have to check that out.
Yeah, very cute stuff.
See what that's all about. Okay.
Yep. And I did some work on my Sassy Jack's Learning Stitches the other day, too.
Mm-hmm.
I did a couple more. I'm behind, but I got a couple more sections done. I didn't post it, though, on Instagram because I was thinking I was going to do more, and then I decided I didn't want to. And then I forgot to take a picture and post. So
yeah. So do you have a studio, a special room for all your stuff?
My husband wishes. Now, I do have a craft room.
Okay.
I live in a cape, a four-bedroom cape, and one of my bedrooms downstairs is my craft room. Like, that's got all my sewing stuff, sewing machine. But basically, the whole house is my studio.
Okay. Okay.
My husband wants it to stay in one room, but it's everywhere. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I do have a long-arm quilt machine in the basement, too.
Oh, my.
It's like the smaller one that's only 5 or 6 feet long. And it's one where it's basically like a large embroidery hoop that you put with these big clampies. Think of like a big Q snap.
Okay.
And you clampy the quilt on and then you do your long arm stuff, but then you have to unclampy it and move the quilt.
Oh.
Because I didn't have room for it. And it's a lot cheaper than some of those big long arms are like 10, 15,000 or more.
Yeah.
And this one was like 5.
Oh, okay.
So, and I've used it some, but it's in the basement. It's not very welcoming down there.
I'll move it to the living room, see how it goes.
I just need a new house.
Oh, okay. So. Yeah, there. Okay.
Yeah. And we want to. It's just, you know, we need to build up some savings.
Okay.
Before we can do that. And wait for the housing market to get a little better. So we're just waiting, but I want a new house. That's what.
So, it sounds like if you're not careful, you're going to get a new house and then there's going to be a building in the backyard and it's going to be take your stuff out there. And
yeah. Well, what my husband wants is to have like a new house with one of those big like 3-car garages. And then the top part of the garage is like whole floor. And then that will be my whole studio. And then he says, oh, you'll keep all your stuff in there. And I'm like, yeah, but what about my little projects that I want to work on while we're hanging out watching TV?
Right.
You know, and right. Then that turns into a pile on the table in the living room.
That would be a dream, though. That would be an absolute dream, though, to have
a
room above a garage like that. Where just,
oh, I know. Yeah. All the windows and stuff. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, and that's key, too, is to have plenty of windows. So you're
Yeah, because I do have 2 big cabinets in the basement as well that we bought and a bunch of tubs that are holding all of my yarn and my stuff. I have polymer clay stuff. I dabbled in that a little bit. And,
okay.
Yeah.
I get the picture. Yeah, I get the picture.
I could open a store.
Yeah. Yeah, I get the picture. Yep. So you sounds like you're able to do, have enough time that you can do this stuff quite a bit then.
Right. I mean, I don't have any kids. And I don't work, so I can just do what I want.
There you go. You win.
You know? I know. And I have a fabulous hubby that says, as long as you're happy, you can do what you want. I'm like, thanks. Oh. Thanks, hubby. You're the best. He is the best.
Yeah, that's great. That's great that you can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when we moved here, we were sort of trying to have kids. And so we set up our life because we moved here from the Netherlands. And so we had to basically, you know, start fresh kind of.
Yeah.
So we set it up to based on his income alone.
Okay.
So, it pretty much, I did work a little bit. I worked in daycare for a little bit until we didn't need the money anymore. And then he's like, well, you can quit if you want to. And I'm like, okay.
Twist my arm.
I had the house to redo. I had painting in the house to redo. I redid all of the trim in the house, filled in any gouges, we have plaster walls. So I filled in all the holes in the walls so they look brand new. My dad came out and helped me take down all the doors. We refinished all the doors.
Mm.
So I did a lot of work on the house.
Yeah. That's a huge savings right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Working got in the way of me fixing up my house. So he's like, well, you don't have to. I was like, great.
Sign me up. Good for you.
But then we needed medical intervention to have the kids. So we both decided we didn't want them that badly.
Yeah.
So we have fur babies.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Yes.
A lot of people have those. Yep. Nothing wrong with that.
They're fabulous. You can go out and not have to worry about a babysitter.
Yeah. Yeah. There is that plus. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There is that plus. Yep. Well, Jennifer. All right. Thank you. That was fun.
Great. Thanks. Yeah.
A first run. Yay. We got it.
Yeah. It was good time.
We learned things.
Great. Yes.
Tamari balls at top of my list. Okay.
Alrighty. Yep.
Okay, so join us tonight. Jennifer will be with us tonight. So join us tonight while Gary fumbles through Punch Needle. So the goal is, see, if you watch me, you won't feel like you can't approach it because I'll be horrible. So nobody's,
it'll be fine.
It'll be, I'm curious. I'm just curious to see how it goes. And now you've given me... Mm-hmm. You give me a little background here so I can feel like I can tackle this. So, So that's tonight, 8:00, Friday night. Beth will be back and we'll be talking about her fabric dyeing escapades.
Ooh, that's going to be fun.
Yep. Sunday is Madeline Harwell of Madeline Elizabeth Designs. Painted canvas. Mm-hmm. Beautiful stuff. Really good. Really good. Great conversation with her. So that's all of that. Jennifer, thanks. That was fun.
Great. Thanks. Yeah, I had a good time.
Yep. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And talk to you whenever you're able to join us next.